Blog Talk Radio.
January 17th, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour with host Polk Runyon. And tonight we present a report on our New Year's Day field trip to the famous Integratron near the Mojave Desert Community of Landers, California. This marvelous building or machine, created by scientist mystic George Van Tassel in the 1950s and featured in the book Weird California, is a New Age shrine. Originally designed and constructed by aerospace engineer Van Tassel from plans and technology received from spacefaring Anunnaki, it was intended to be a giant electrostatic generator which could regenerate human tissue and create an interdimensional vortex and even, according to rumors, act as a time machine. Physically, it is a huge dome with remarkable acoustics. Although it fell into disrepair after George's death, it is now beautifully restored. And even though the giant centrifuge has yet to be engaged, and there are plans for that, the building itself is a magical experience. Now, we enjoyed a crystal bowl sound bath inside the dome and felt wonderfully centered and invigorated. A greatly honored frater in our group vibrated holy names of God in the central channel of the dome with awesome effect. We also visited the remote giant rock, the huge boulder out in the desert where George Van Tassel was first contacted by a UFO. You can read his own account of this experience in his book, The Council of Seven Lights. That's on the internet for free, by the way. Which reminds us of the Urantia book in Philos from Dweller on Two Planets and Zachariah Sitchin. Now, after our expedition, we were hosted in nearby Joshua Tree by one of our dear sisters who prepared a breakfast the next morning that even the elder gods would have enjoyed. So, join us today and we will share the Integratron experience. And years and years ago, I flew over the Integratron even before it was restored and in a light plane. And all the instruments in the plane went crazy. Now, the Integratron was built on ley lines, and George had figured out exactly, or either he and or his Anunnaki contacts figured out exactly where to build it so that it would be in the best position to maximize magnetic lines of force. Now, speaking of magnetic lines of force, of course, the Integratron has no metal in it whatsoever. It's entirely wood. It's entirely organic, which is another very interesting feature of it. Now, just get a little background on this machine. go to their website here, which I invite you to go to. And also, you associate members of CHS, we have a slideshow of this whole expedition that Zandria did, and it's on our website. So if you're members, you can get in and look at that, and you can just, it really is almost like taking the trip. It's a terrific slideshow. Now, according to their website out here, the Integratron is a device constructed on the instruction of George Van Tassel for scientific research on rejuvenation, anti-gravity, and time travel. It is a Tholos constructed out of wood, fiberglass, various non-ferromagnetic metals, glass, and concrete. He built the structure in Landers, California, near Joshua Tree, as a rejuvenation machine, supposedly following instructions provided by visitors from the planet Venus. No, other than from the planet Venus, that's not what he has in his book. The structure was financed predominantly by donations, including funds from Howard Hughes. Following George Van Tassel's death in 1978, the building was owned by a series of individuals and was left in various states of disrepair. Before being purchased by sisters Joanne, Nancy, and Patty Carl in the early 2000s. Now, the sisters now promote the Integratron as an acoustically perfect structure and say that it is currently being explored in the areas of science, architecture, neuroacoustics, music, energy healing, alternative health, and spirituality. The building is currently open to the public at select times, with the sisters regularly performing sound baths, meditation-like sessions accompanied by tones from quartz bowls at certain points during the week. Now, this New Year's event, we had tickets in advance for that, which one of our sisters got the tickets for us. So we were out there with, oh gosh, they must have had 100 people out there. They have a beautiful park out in the, if you like the desert, it's beautiful. I mean, but you got it, this is stark. This is way, way out in the desert. And yet it's a beautiful park, and they have walls and a patio, and they have a gift shop. It's just a delightful, delightful place. And one of the people were all, it was almost like going back to the 1970s in a way, because the people out there were all, it was almost, in a way, it was kind of like a love-in. I mean, it was wonderful. It was the best of the new age. And it kind of made me feel like I was taking a time travel trip just in that respect. Now, as far as what the Carl sisters are doing with it right now, the Integratron, as you can imagine, is a giant, it's really a giant dome and a giant centrifuge. I know this is a negative comparison, but it operates basically on the same principle as the Nazi bell, if you're familiar with it. You remember we had Joseph Farrell, the author of The Philosopher's Stone, on some time back, and we discussed the Nazi bell. And I remember at that time I asked him, well, Dr. Farrell, what are the rumors about the Nazi bell being a stargate and a time machine? And he got kind of defensive about that. But yeah, but that's the same sort of situation with the Integratron. And the Integratron is a very positive, the Nazi bell is kind of dangerous, but it was ceramic. Now, the Integratron is wood, primarily wood. And you get inside this huge dome, and I mean, it is big. It's not 70 feet high, and the upper story makes it about 50 feet high. And all of these beams converge up in the top, and it's all wood. It's not just wood, it's laminated wood. And it's all beautifully varnished. And you get up in there, and it is, you look at the woodwork, just the woodwork in this thing, and you're just amazed at the work that went into it. And now, here's the key to the acoustic part of it. George, well, the top of the dome, this big, great, big concrete donut, and this thing must weigh a ton, a couple of tons easily. It has a hole right in the center of it, a sort of a smoke hole goes out the top. And each one of the beams, the beams that hold up the dome, that go up, that curve up there, the laminated beams, are butted into this great big huge concrete weight up there. So what that does is it pushes down into the bedrock, and it gives you a resonating bell-like situation because of that pressure downward on those beams. Now, this structure is so strong that it withstood an earthquake that would have knocked down any kind of lesser building, and it didn't hurt it at all. But the fact that it has this pressure coming down, holding this thing down, you get into that upper chamber in that dome, and the acoustics are unbelievable, and especially in the center, because the hole in the dome comes down, and then there's a hole right in the floor of the upper floor, and that goes down into a tube. And for some reason or other, and I don't know, I'm not an acoustical expert, so I don't know why, but that center axis right there has an amplifying effect and a vibratory amplifying effect that is amazing. So now, we in our group, we had myself and our members and sister Siren and brother Michael, and we had our venerable Mary Kamer, our very venerable frater, and he. As most of you know, those of you who are members, America's a theurgist. And I mean, Abel, he really is a theurgist. He does these permutations of Hebrew holy names, sort of like Ira Kaplan. And he does them in a very, very vibrant voice. He has a wonderful voice. And so Merrick got up there, right there in the sound, in the column, in the inside there, and started these permutations of the holy name, and this was absolutely awe-inspiring. This was worth the whole trip, to experience him doing this. And so, I can't describe it, but you can imagine it. And what they have, though, that we did that after the sound bath, but with the sound bath that they do out there, they have a set of very, very big, ferociously expensive set of white crystal bowls. The biggest ones, the size of bigger than a 14-quart bucket. I mean, these are big bowls. And they're all different tones. As they get smaller, the bowls have different tones. And you strike them, of course, like you would a Tibetan singing bowl. And so what we do in a sound bath out there is everybody, there's a whole bunch of pads and pillows and whatever, and you all lie down in various places in a sort of a circle around inside the intergratron upper chamber. And then the artist who's running the sound bath plays the crystal balls for you, and they vibrate all around inside the dome. And this is a very, very, very wonderful experience. Now, I wonder if they're getting those bowls from up in Mount Shasta, because I remember there's a shop up there that specializes in the same kind of bowls. I didn't have a chance to ask the Carl sisters about that, but we met Joanna Nancy. They're very, 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 very nice ladies, and they are very sincere about what they're doing out there. And they have a rental schedule, of course, and you can rent them through, rent the Integratron for valid spiritual work, and you can they have events out there. And I encourage you very, very much to go to their website, and all you have to do is just Integratron on Google, and I'll take you right there. So go check it out. And if you're anywhere near the area, this is certainly worth doing. Now, to get back to Van Tassel and what this thing is really supposed to have been and what his vision. Now, first, before I get into that, let me say that that George Van Tassel and this Giant Rock and the airport out of Giant Rock and the whole UFO thing. George Van Tassel, one of the major people in the UFO community back when the flying saucers were really, really getting to be quite a thing back in the 50s. Now, George bought the airport. When I say it's an airport, it's not an airport. Giant Rock is way, way, way out in the desert. You need a four-wheel drive vehicle, really, you should have to get out there. We went up, I had my Hummer, but Merrick had his Dodge van. We made it out there, but I don't recommend going out there without a four-wheel drive. And Giant Rock is way, way out in the desert. It's about 8 miles away from the Integratron. And they run, by the way, you don't have to worry about getting lost out there. They'll, for $10, they'll drive you out. The Integratron crew will drive you out there for $10 out to Giant Rock. And it's worth going out there to see, because this is an incredible volcanic formation of huge boulders piled up in this hill. It's almost a mountain of these great big boulders. And the biggest one of all is Giant Rock, and it's just sitting there, you know, next to the hill, and it's about, oh gosh, 60 feet high, and probably about almost 100 feet long, and it's just a huge, huge rock, the size of an ocean liner almost. And George Van Tassel, right after the war, he bought this airstrip, this dirt strip out there next to Giant Rock, and this was used in World War II as an emergency landing field. So George bought it, and he moved out there with his wife, and they had a desert. A desert cottage out there or whatever, and this is where he first was contacted by the UFOs. Now, I'm sitting here with his book, Council of Seven Lights. And by the way, you can get this on the internet too, and you can read it online or you can print it out. And it's called The Council of Seven Lights by George W. Van Tassel. And here again, just Google and it'll take you right to it. And what I wanted to do is, while I'm talking here, I'm gonna flip through here and see if I can pick up where he was first contacted. And but if I can't find the text right here, I'll tell you about it. Anyway, he was out, and he and his wife during the summer they used to sleep under the stars, which you can do out there. And so they were both asleep one night. And he woke up in the middle of the night, and there was somebody walking out there at night in the moonlight. There's somebody walking toward him, toward his porch, and he and his wife were both They're both out there in their sleeping bags, sleeping. And he tried to wake her up, but she didn't seem to want to wake up. And so he went and got up and went out to meet this individual. And the individual turned out to be one of these, George didn't use the term Anunnaki at that time, but basically that's what they were. And so one thing I want to make clear, as far as George Van Tassel is concerned, one of the things that you need to understand with him was that he was not this was not some fluffy bunny kind of thing. I mean, George, whoever he was contacting, these individuals seemed to be very, very much in line with the Book of Enoch and the whole Anunnaki situation. And this was way back when that sort of thing wasn't popular at all. And George was related a lot of this to biblical mythology. And in fact, he even thought in a sense that the Integratron in some ways replicated the tabernacle of Moses. And so this entity who called himself Saldanga, I think he called himself, he took George over and took him inside the ship. Saldanga, yeah, right. Here's a little bit of this. When the scout ship landed here in August of 1953, I observed this object. Saldanga was turning it. This is talking about a laser, and this is way back before lasers were even developed. And they suddenly opened two opposite ends of it and pointed it at the granite rocks of the mountain. I saw a pencil lead sized stream of light between the object and the mountain. I thought he was shooting something near the mountain. Later, he explained that he was charging the device, and he said they charge various other pieces of their equipment over granite mountains. This is due to the piezoelectronic effect set up by the quartz in the granite matrix. Now, let me point this out. Right out there at Giant Rock, next to Giant Rock, there's a crystal hill. The hill is entirely white, entirely made of white crystal quartz. It's amazing. In fact, we picked up some quartz for some of our alchemical experiments out there. And these Anunnaki, I call them, like George, he called them angels, actually. He related this, of course, to Genesis. He doesn't mention the Book of Enoch, but I'm sure you read it. And the idea here was that they were, and this is why I say there seems to be, relates to Urantia. If those of you are familiar with the Urantia book, you know that all the various Melchizedeks flying around in spaceships, taking care of the different planets. And this is kind of relates to this. And so I don't mean to look down on Spaceship Ruthie, but let's say this is several cuts above the Unarius group, I think, is several cuts above it. But anyway, George got Saldanga and his people gave George the plans for the Integratron and helped him, find a place to put it and do it, whatever. Now, the idea of the way the Integratron is supposed to work is that it is an electrostatic generator. Now, those of you who have ever played around with, and we all, I think we've all played around with them in high school physics or high school physics classes. Yeah, it's a thing called a Van de Graaff accelerator. I know I built one, I think. And it's got a rubber belt in it, an electric motor in it. It's got a big globe that's either copper or aluminum, sits on the top of it. And you get that thing going and get the electric motor and the belt going and all the little brushes. And what ends up happening is you can develop, about 120,000 volts of static electricity in that dome up on the top. And ours, I remember I've still got it, actually. It doesn't work very well now, but it's still got it. I used to be able to take a crystal ball, and I could get, with that Van de Graaff, and I could get a spark an inch long off of that thing with a crystal ball. So basically what the Integratron was supposed to be was a giant electrostatic generator. But interestingly enough, Saldanha and his crew said that it should not have any metal. There should be no metal whatsoever in it. And George faithfully followed that. So, but at the same time, there is below the floor, right below the upper floor in the upper chamber, is what looks like a whole set of wheel spokes for a wheel that isn't there. In other words, the spokes are sticking out the sides of the Integratron, and these spokes stick out, and they're supposed to revolve. And obviously, they're supposed to revolve at tremendous speed. And how is this going to be run without metal? And yet, there's a big aquifer under the Integratron, and George had channels, wells, and channels, water channels running down, and I believe he intended to run this centrifuge with steam. This seems to be the way he was going to do it, and in other words, create a big steam engine and run this thing on steam, which would get him away from a lot of metallic problems. And you know, he could, with steam, using steam, with the right design, you could get a tremendous revolution going there. So this is probably what he planned to do, although I'm not sure. I had a good friend, very good friend of mine years ago, dead now, John Reeb, who was a teacher at Pasadena City College, used to teach English, and John was an occultist. And John had also been on George Van Tassel's board of directors at one time. And John used to call me up. He had a four-wheel drive vehicle. This was years and years ago. He called me up at about 8 o'clock at night and say, "Let's go to Giant Rock right now," you know, and we piled this in Pasadena, you know, God, and he'd come driving over, flying over there, and I'd grab my still lacing my boots up, and we'd hop in the four-wheel drive, and we would drive, and it'd take 3.5 hours, you know, and then out in the desert with the floodlights going and everything out there to Giant Rock, and I mean, it was crazy, John was, you know, convinced that this machine really would, once it was restored, that it really would do what George said it would do, or what he was told it would do. And now the plans for completing what George was doing, mysteriously got sequestered somewhere after George died. And so here's a mystery. This is, I was saying tonight to Zangri over dinner, it's kind of like the cipher manuscript of the Golden Dawn. You know, it says, "Where are the plans to complete the Integratron? Who has them?" You know, and whatever. Well, I don't know. I mean, you hear all kinds of rumors. But I do hear that maybe somehow or other they're going to get back together. Now, there's some scientists who are seriously interested in this, and I hope that there is some support in that. But the idea is once you get this centrifuge going, then it is number one, an electrostatic generator. So that's it. And that's very, very, very high voltage, but very low amperage. So this means that this is a lot of electricity, but it's relatively safe. Now that's that part of it. If it operates like a Van de Graaff, it would be. Now, as you also know, the other side, or the other sort of device like a Van de Graaff, is a Tesla coil. And Tesla coils, unfortunately, are not safe. And by the way, there have been some Tesla coil experiments out there at the Intergrid too. But now, the Nazi Bell, which is, as I say, a similar device, it was a counter-rotating ceramic dome or bell, and that supposedly produced very, very high voltage and accounted for, if the stories are to be credited, accounted for some pretty serious accidents. So, but on the other hand, as I said, a Van de Graaff really will. It's low amperage, very low amperage and high voltage. So essentially, once this thing gets going, it should be safe up to a certain point or whatever, and yet here again, we're wondering. You wonder about this, you know, like I said with I mentioned when we had Joe Farrell on, and I said, well, I hear about the Nazi Bell being disappearing and going into other dimensions and being a time machine and all that, and Dr. Farrell wanted to get out of that one real quick. He said, don't go there. but seriously, if you're going to have a time machine, if you're going to have a Stargate, you're going to have to use a torsion principle like this, and this is basically where it's going to. This is what you're going to use is this sort of a torsion device. So, and that principle, by the way, the torsion principle, has been known in alchemy for a long, long time. And I'm not going to, I know immediately, I have some traditional alchemists listening, and they're going to say, that's a lot of baloney, I didn't know about that. Well, they damn well did, so I'm not going to tell you why. Maybe we'll discuss that in the associate member program. But anyway, yeah, torsion is one of the principles that we've discovered in modern alchemy that we've discovered is a way to really alter the continuum in many, many ways. And also, too, radioactivity. And that brings us to the Philosopher's Stone again. And because that evening, after we did the Intergrid and after we did Giant Rock and after a wonderful, wonderful dinner at delightful Mexican restaurant. We had a real good Mexican dinner, and then we went out for another adventure. We went out to visit the arch alchemist Art Kunkin. And for those of you who don't know why, we had Art Kunkin on, by the way. And go through the archives in the Hermetic Hour, and you find the show with Art Kunkin on the Philosopher's Stone, and we had Art on. Art is probably, I would say, now that Hans and Insel's passed on, I think Art's probably the number one alchemist in the country. at this time. I'm sure there'll be people who dispute me on that. But Art is a graduate of the Paracelsus Institute in Utah, and that's old Dr. Rydell, Frater Albertus. And Art studied with him for 7 years, and he edited Frater Albertus's journal. And Art right now, and by the way, and also Art was the publisher and the editor of the L.A. Free Press back in the psychedelic era, and this was one of the top underground newspapers in the country, and Art, this was Art's baby, and he edited it and contributed to it. And right now, Art's writing a history of the Free Press, which ought to be absolutely fascinating. So we went out to and Art lives way out in this mystic Joshua Tree mystical retreat, which is a community and out there in the desert. And so we're in the middle of the night, of course, and we're out in the desert, and Art has to come, and we have to call him with a cell phone from the gated, and he has to send somebody out to get us, and we follow him through a whole maze of dirt roads and everything to get back to Art's place. And then he has to sit in there and spend a delightful 3 hours or so conversing with the top alchemist in the country. And that was really, really quite enlightening. Now, Art's latest alchemy project, which I am I'm doing a version of it myself, and I'm finding it that it's very, very good. He has discovered, following the lead of a few other people, but he's actually put this into practice, the idea that radioactive material, uranium, and I'm not talking about refined isotopes, I'm talking about uranium right out of the ground, that radioactive material, if properly employed, is what Art considers the Philosopher's Stone. And the reason why he believes this is that irradiating food improves it does change the molecular structure and alters, or Art thinks it actually enhances the mitochondria. Some people disagree with me on that, but whatever it does, it certainly does affect the molecular structure of the food, makes it last longer, it preserves it, and so he, combining this with some earlier ancient information that he researched on the use of apples in alchemy, and so he came up with this idea that if he irradiates apples, now this is not making them radioactive, understand. You're not making the apple radioactive. You're irradiating it. And unless I know that sounds horrible, but then you think that half the food you buy in the stores is irradiated, so it's not really that much of a thing. But so it doesn't really make the food radioactive, but it does irradiate. It changes it. It does. And then you eat these magic apples. And I set this thing up, I got a few ramifications on it myself, but I mean, some other, which I'm not going to get into, but so we had a lot to talk about. And Art has a book, by the way, on this, and exactly how he does it and everything. And so you can go Google Art Kunkin, Kunkin. That's Art Kunkin, Alchemy. Yeah, it'll take you there, and you can get Art's book, and you can get the secrets of the secret of immortality there. Well, I don't know about immortality, but Art's, he's 84 now? He's 84, and he looks, and heck, gosh, he hey, he's, you know, I'm not going to say how old I am, but he's a deal older than I am, and he's in a lot better shape than I am. I got to tell you that. And full of energy and, you know, looking great, and boy, so he says his hair is growing faster than he can cut it, and his fingernails are great. So I think he's got something with these apples, and I'm eating them too. And so I think that Art's got something going there. Now, but we had quite an interesting, exchange of discussion, sort of a little informal symposium, and. And Art, gave us copies of the Oracle magazine, which he has an article in. Anyway, so then, before the witching hour, we took off to our sister, Draconia Sophia's wonderful, beautiful place out there in St. Joshua Tree. And she put us up, and the next morning, oh, gosh, she laid out this breakfast that was just, oh, boy, it was terrific. So it's about a three-hour, actually, it's about a three-and-a-half-hour drive back to Los Angeles from out there. And the drive's pretty easy, pretty pleasant. So all in all, it was a terrific, really a terrific experience. And like I said, those of you who belong to the associate member program, go on the Hermetic website, and we've got a slideshow showing you the whole thing. Now that we've covered the basics on this whole thing, I'm talking about this Council of Seven Lights. There are certain things in here that I found very, very interesting. George has, like so many people have, he has found that the Bible itself, he didn't mention the Book of Enoch, but I'm sure he's read it, but the Bible itself contains the secrets of our original connection with what Sitchin called the Anunnaki. Anyway, there's some other features here too that I'd like to point out. That he has a chapter called Methuselah's Toy, and this is on the Great Pyramid. And he says the Great Pyramid, pyramid means fire and mid, and the equal distance between two extremes, pyramid, fire, positive light substance in the middle of Giza, Egypt, is the only existing structure on Earth that remains intact after 25,816 years. And, I think he may be right on that. It is the greatest power plant ever built on this planet. Now, Joe Farrell, I don't know whether Joe's listening right now, but Dr. Farrell has about three books on the same thing. And the Giza Death Star and the Giza Death Star deployed and this George came up with this before a number of people recently have really glommed on to this idea that the Great Pyramid was a tremendous generator. Now, I'll continue with George, what George has to say here. At the time of its use, it could furnish more power than the generators at Niagara Falls could produce in 1,000 years. The Great Pyramid was never intended to be a tomb or a monument to the pharaohs. Neither was it built by the Egyptians or the Hyksos, as assumed by historians. It was erected by a remnant of the Adamic race on this planet. In order to produce the power required, the pyramid was built in minute conformity to the measurements of our solar system. All dimensions are accurately computed to ensure correct functional operation. Now, listen to this one. The pyramid was designed by Enoch and built by Thothma, with the help of the true descendants of the Adamic race, the space people, who had made a first landing on Earth. Knowing the universal laws and their application, they received timely warning and journeyed to Egypt before the sinking of the great continent Atlantis, Enoch, and Phothma, flying in an aircraft called a Valix, V-A-I-L-X. And after landing in Egypt 25,825 years ago, they started operations and spent the next 9 years building the Great Pyramid. Now, a Valix is the only other place I have ever seen an aircraft, an ancient aircraft referred to as a Valix, a Valix, is in Dweller on Two Planets by Philos. That's the only other place I've ever seen it. The Hindu name for this these aircraft is not the same. And this Valix, and he puts it in quotes. So obviously, George has either read Dweller on Two Planets, which is very, I wouldn't doubt that at all, because Dweller on Two Planets was first written, first published in 1904, I think, and it was written back in before 1900, and it's been in print ever since. And so he very well may have read it there, but George is here connecting his Enoch or Enochian vision here with Philos of Atlantis. And this of course, with some hints of connection to the Urantia from Mythos, sort of places George in a higher, I would say, in a higher, more credible level of intuition and connection, let's say, than a lot of the flying saucer New Age stuff that followed after him and a little bit before him, but whatever. This has a haunting ring of reality to it. At least for me. Anyway, and George, his whole physics, he like Shaver, he invented his own version of physics and mathematics, and I notice that he goes on cubes. George is kind of making his. And this may very well result from the cube of space. The Kabbalistic cube of space could possibly be the influence on this. It could possibly, because George has the idea of the cube and he being able to place a cube inside a planet and the points where the cube the corners of the cube where they would meet the surface of the planet would be points of power. This is very, very similar to this present tetrahedron theory of doing it the same thing, doing a tetrahedron who's the friend of Hoagland that's been doing this, where you can calculate by putting a tetrahedron or drawing a tetrahedron inside a planet and finding those power points where the tetrahedron touches the surface. It's the same sort of idea. It's magnetic. It's calculating magnetic lines of force, and George, some of his ideas on gravity and all seem to be similar idea. I'm not trying to say that George was into Shaver. I don't want to, because I know if I say that might, in some people's eyes, that might tend to denigrate George. I mean, and say, well, he's doing the same kind of stuff as Schaefer. No, of course, I happen to like Schaefer, but then, you know, I'm willing to concede that a lot of people don't. but I think that George really, because he had a better technical background than Schaefer, is certainly his own particular brand of physics deserves more consideration. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. So I would suggest to those of you who really want to kind of dig into this, also, too, his channeling, George Channel, he's really quite a mystic. And he channeled, and his concept of God is very, very close, if not identical, with the basic Hermetic concept, you know, of complete unity and connection to the infinite. Let me just read you one of his channelings here and give you an idea of his mysticism. O man, my life is not for the victor, nor for the one who falls in defeat. My light is to the one who gains understanding of my ways. My arms are not extended either to the right or the left, but are centered to balance the living individual parts of my being. Though forces may oppose your every move, my strength lies in the power to meet the opposition. Though evil may tempt you, my light is brightest when the evil is overcome. For evil is not of my creation, O man. Evil is brought about by those who falter on the way to me. Never, never in all my eternity shall man control the paths to me. The paths are my ways, and man can only travel on my paths. In all my doings, I have brought about a pattern of progression. None can turn about my works. None can interrupt my way. Those who follow in the darkness only trick themselves. Stand within the light of me, for I am light of thee, O man, and I can only shine when you have made the way in progress of my doing. Lean not upon another, only accept thy brother as one to help, one to assist along the way. That unity in numbers may bring about progress in my infinite light. Fear not, fear not. There is no fear within my being of you. Fear is only added by those things you do that are not within the pattern of my ways. Reach within, I am there. None can scare you when you find the me in thee. Stand upright. Death is only that which adds to those who have performed great. Fear no evil. Stand within my light. Feel my living light within you. Know that I am there throughout eternity. Now, so that's Mystical George. The Council of Seven Lights has a number of very beautiful passages like that in it, and it's well worth reading. George has another book, too, and right now I can't recall the title, but there's another book which may have more about the Integratron in it. I think we've given a pretty good idea of what it does, what it can do. And, of course, if you realize, tonight we went through a little time warp, we started at 8 o'clock, but you didn't listen to us until 8:30. So, you know, that's probably the influence of the Integratron. Now, what I would like to do sometime, and I'm very, very much interested in doing this, is renting the Integratron and having a Hermetic yoga session out there, because what we could do is sit in a circle around that central tube with that marvelous acoustical effect right there in the center with the tube, and bring down celestial power down through the dimensions that we do in Hermetic yoga. And (clears throat) to try to clear my throat here. So we could, if we did our mudras and our mantra, we could sit there and we could bring down all the way down from the top, you know, the way we do it in Hermetic Yoga. Which is, by the way, for those of you who don't know, it's an extension of Rigardi's middle pillar. It's extending Rigardi's middle pillar to all of the spheres of the Tree of Life as chakras, and it's very effective. And of course, we teach it. And so I'm going to go ahead and do that chant. Can we bring it down? Imagining what this would be like in that terrific acoustical vortex out there as we sit around that shaft of acoustical resonance that comes down. Yeah, so all the way down to the earth. Now, next week we are going to have rerun the show on Hermetic Yoga. So you get to learn or refresh yourself on the Hermetic Yoga that we really think we really ought to take out there to the Integratron and maximize the effect. And so we'll see you next week on the rerun. And the week following that, we're going to do a wonderful walk through magical fiction. We're going to compare the writings of Jack Vance with the writings of Clark Ashton Smith. And Jack Vance, of course, was the writer who inspired Dungeons and Dragons, as you probably know. And Clark Ashton Smith was a good friend of Lovecraft's, and he created the original Dying Earth. And so we're going to compare these two writers and see if we can recreate some of their magic. So that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. And meanwhile, good magic.